Hi, this is Mark Margolis. I played Tio on Breaking Bad. And if you don't start listening to Mr. Media, I'm going to have to ding my bell.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Ken Danziger and Jeff Rush, co-authors of Alternative Scriptwriting, Beyond the Hollywood Formula, now in its fifth edition. Stick around. Alternative today, mainstream tomorrow. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of Hollywood screenwriters who couldn't write their way out of a frozen banana truck, until they could, in the Noonan Media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Every couple of years, Ken Danziger and Jeff Rush are faced with a dilemma. How do we keep fresh a book called Alternative Scriptwriting when what was once alternative is more mainstream than anyone could have ever dreamed? Every generation of filmmakers since Thomas Edison has railed against the basic structure of the medium, whether it was talkies overtaking silence, narrative versus anti-narrative, or a general rejection of three-act format that so closely resembles live theater and its heart and soul. Don't know what I'm talking about? Early in the new fifth edition of their book, Danziger and Rush compare the work of two prominent directors whose films most everyone knows, Steven Spielberg and Steven Soderbergh. It's as simple as E.T. versus Sex, Lies, and Videotape, two hit movies that both happen to use lowercase letters in their titles. In a moment, I'm going to ask the co-authors to compare and contrast these two well-known filmmakers, but I think anyone who considers themselves a film fan knows how differently structured are the films of Spielberg and Soderbergh. You don't have to be a literal film student to gain a number of insights from alternative scriptwriting, but the biggest one is right there on the cover. Instead of showing one or two film images, this edition gives us a photo of Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds, atop a second image from, not a movie at all, but a landmark television series, AMC's brilliant Breaking Bad. The message is clear. Some of the most alternative scriptwriting of our generation is being created not for film, but for cable television. Put that blue crystal meth in your bong. To Mr. Media.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hey, nice to see you guys. So how about it? Is TV kind of the new alternative in the scriptwriting business?
Well, I argue that it is. That trying to fill 13 episodes a season over 5 or 6 seasons poses a whole new kind of issue for the writer and opens up the kind of space and opportunity to really explore stories that can go in places they couldn't have gone in feature films.
I think television also satisfies the need that the audience has for novelty. So instead of presenting the usual fare on television, television is looking to present a Western, a Shakespeare, to present a crime story like Breaking Bad as tragedy as well as good entertainment. So television is really a kind of new major center of creativity that appeals to the younger audience who is searching for new things, novelty.
Does cable television in particular, where we see a lot of fresh things happening, is it does it rely on a series having an alternative view, or is it that because they're doing a series, whether they're doing 10 to 13 episodes for cable or even 22 for broadcast, that because there's so many episodes, there's an opportunity there to do a little creative script writing and to be a little different?
You know, I just went back and read our section on 3-act structure. And we talk about how 3-act structure tends to privilege plot over texture. And I still think that's true. In long-form television, which is much more episodic in its structure, there's a great deal more time before the 13 episodes comes to a climax, during which the writer can sort of explore the thematic and textual material. So I think that's very much part of it. I'm just watching the series Justified, which is astonishing. And there are a number of episodes before the story really grabs hold that are more like sort of riffs on the theme than they are on straight story building. And they're terrific.
So just to pick up with what Jeff is saying, there's a kind of tonal exploration that can go cheap or it can go deep. So in something like Justified, you know, we start light, but we're going a little deeper. And in something like Breaking Bad or Deadwood or Mad Men, it's virtually, you know, it's Dostoevsky-ish, you know, in where the writers take it. You know, it's a wild journey. And it's exciting.
Where do you guys put a show like 24 in that spectrum? When it started, of course, it was very novel because every episode was an hour. I mean, it literally took an hour of the 24 episodes. Is that just a plot conceit, or was that alternative script writing in the way it was put together?
One of the things about alternative script writing is that it emphasizes the formal constraints of the medium. And certainly in the first few seasons, when 24 was so new, the aspect of apparently continuous time and trying to structure a story in it exposed the sort of formal plot elements of the storytelling. And so you could watch 24 just for the action, but you could also watch it for the way each episode was constructed to apparently cover an hour of time. So I think that element, more than its sort of episodic nature, has an alternative, element.
By the way, it's coming back as 12 hours. I don't even know what that means.
I saw that. I was kind of wondering, you know, if they're going to commit to coming back, why would they call it 24 and then make it 12? It doesn't make any sense. Although, you know, what are you going to do? Have you found much pushback, though, to the idea that there's alternative script writing happening in television as opposed to film? I mean, I think we've always thought of it as film, but it does seem like a lot of the best writing right now is going on in television.
We're actually, I think, finding the opposite, that writers are extremely excited about what television offers and are eager to talk about how they can expand their repertoire so they can deal with television.
It's pretty remarkable that what has happened in the film business, which has essentially gone to action adventure tentpoles, in not compelling ways, while it's going towards a formulaic, a strongly visual but formulaic presentation, television is taking the opposite tack, and the characters are more intriguing, the storylines are more intriguing, and people are relating. I just talked to someone, a friend, who's an analyst, and she's crazed about Game of Thrones. She just can't leave this series, you know. and so... For a person like this, who's utterly literary, she's my age, so she's not a spring chicken. So the fact that she's looking for novelty and turning to television for it is remarkable. So there is a kind of storytelling shift going on between film and what's going on television.
Well, and I guess we're also seeing a lot of traditional film actors stepping over to TV these days more and more each year. Partly, I guess, you know, that for men and women of a certain age, there are only so many roles in film because they're not seen as drawing young people to the theater. But also, it's just better stuff being done for them, I guess.
Well, if you look at something like Girls, you talk about an instant career maker. I mean, Dunham can now do virtually anything. She could run for the UN. I mean, she could do anything. That's extraordinary. And that's, careers are being changed profoundly by television as we speak.
Do you, just one or two more things about television in particular. We see, obviously, Netflix is doing its own stuff, House of Cards. They brought back Arrested Development. They have other things. Amazon is doing series. Would you expect to see them doing things that are more fitting with what you write about alternative script writing in terms of presenting an alternative, or do you think that they're just going to go, you know, highest common denominator?
Yeah.
I have not seen the new Arrested Development, but what I've read about it suggests that it's using a kind of structure in which it sort of gives repeated views on similar story material. That's certainly an interesting and alternative way to approach stories, and it seems like a very good way to solve the sort of issue of how does episodic television change when it's all released at one time.
I think the other thing that seems to have some appeal is this binge viewing phenomenon, where you see an entire season in a weekend. That's how I saw House of Cards, and it was great fun. So you know, I think it's opening up avenues of consumer choice, consumer preference, but also a little more consumer control, all of which probably means something in those choices.
House of Cards is also interesting because you can compare it to the BBC version, which is, you know, 4 hours rather than 13. And you can really see the difference in the story structure. Some of it's good, some of it's bad, but certainly the 13-hour American version opens up the kind of things dealing with gender roles and power tensions that the British version really only vaguely touches on.
All right, now no spoilers, fellas. I've only gotten through the first 2 hours so far.
Okay.
My wife and I just started watching, actually both House of Cards and Arrested Development this weekend. The kind of bargain is an hour of this and a half an hour of that anytime we sit down. So, but the House of Cards, I think it's remarkably well written, and at the same time, it doesn't seem to be written for a broad audience. A lot of people sit through and trying to follow the players, and you know who's after what. You've really got to focus on it, I guess. So,
yeah. My students liked it as a kind of opportunity for binge viewing, less content-driven than media event. You know, so it kind of struck them. Maybe some of the politics didn't really play with them or mean anything to them.
Nope, I could see that. What about coming back to the book? Is it getting harder and harder to qualify and quantify the word alternative in alternative script writing?
Yes, it is. And in the, I think the previous edition, I added a chapter dealing with three-act structure in which I sort of backed away from the really clear sense of difference to say that the line has really blurred, and that in many more mainstream films, the structure is looser and more open than it used to be. And I think it absolutely is harder to clarify, and that's to the benefit, because as Ken says, you know, the film industry is changing increasingly to these big blockbusters, and then a few films for a different kind of audience. And that those different kind of films are, I think, much more willing to blur that line.
Well, I think we're seeing different kind of options with the term alternative. So going back to Spielberg, you know, Spielberg has always, his expertise is action adventure, you know, fantasy, you know, and so on. But occasionally he tries to break the mold. So he tries to do a war film that's utterly realistic in Private Ryan or Schindler. And then he tries to do something genre different in Munich, and the audience totally rejects it. Then, you know, he sort of goes back to his action adventure and licks his wounds, and then goes with Lincoln. Now, Lincoln was interesting to me because instead of exploiting his skills as an action adventure, as a camera, you know, positioning the camera in the, you know, so close to the action that you couldn't help it, you're there, he backs off totally and presents almost like a Lincoln as a chamber piece. Now, to me, it was very audacious directing, and it was allowing language and performance to fully have front and center. So, to me, that's a kind of alternative to what he usually does and what he's known for. And what's interesting is how many people found they couldn't go with him in those changes. You know, we want the action. We want the old Steven. And both he and Soderbergh have sort of roamed around and sought, whether it's genre-wise or stylistically, different approaches. And that's kind of alternative. But does the audience let them do it?
And Jeff, since Ken picked up my challenge on Spielberg, maybe you can pick up on Soderbergh and kind of describe the differences in his work, certainly as compared to the alternative label.
You know, I'm going to have to pass on that because I have not seen his latest stuff. But I do want to talk a bit more about Lincoln, because I think Lincoln is an extraordinarily interesting film to come out of Spielberg. And I think Ken is absolutely right that it's a film that's sort of breaks the mold in its willingness to allow language and almost a meditation on language to dominate over the structure of action. And, you know, that seems to me to be very much an alternative approach and really an astonishing film. I went to that film kicking and screaming and was very knocked out by what he was willing to do in terms of allowing it to have a kind of an abstract linguistic dimension that I've never seen in his work before.
Your reaction to Lincoln is where I am. I'm waiting for it on cable. I just couldn't bring myself to spend you know, $25 for the two of us to go see a movie about Lincoln at this point. I don't know. But I will watch it.
Think about Tony Kushner.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Great, great writer.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
Oh.
What characteristics of alternative script writing do you want readers of your book to embrace, guys?
Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff.
Well, I mean, I think the notion of formal innovation, the idea that things will come along, cause people to refresh their view of film, to see kind of the surface of the film or the formal elements of the film, but also a recognition that those things come, they reawaken us, and that they have to somehow be reintegrated into story. And so there's always going to be a tension between sort of formal awareness and story. And that we, I think, want our audience to understand that and to recognize that that's a dynamic process, and that they and filmmakers will keep reinventing how to do that. And so rather than sort of celebrate the films that did it, you know, once in the past and then sort of move on, I think the idea is to keep looking for that tension and how it plays out in contemporary work.
You know, to add to that, particularly in this country, because film is so successful a medium and we look to emulate success, we believe that it's all formula. Well, there are certain technical elements that most films share, but formula, you know, just looking at genre, you know, genre is flexible. It's not formulaic. It may have certain tropes, but it can be used by a filmmaker in any number of ways. So you can go dark, you can go light, you can, de-emphasize the main character, you can emphasize the antagonist. I mean, there are so many options in pulling a story together in the way that you, the storyteller, wants. And I think for me, the great message of the book is really there are baselines in storytelling, and the challenge for the filmmaker and the desire of the audience is, so take me somewhere else. You know, I just read a book, which I'll mention, by James Salter, called All That Is. 85-year-old guy, wrote a screenplay 40 years ago called Downhill Racer, has written only 3 or 4 books, has lived a kind of sketchy life, but he's so deep and wonderful a writer that he takes us into a world of a character. I'm not even sure we care about this main character, but we are deeply in it. And you know, that's the challenge for writers, for filmmakers. They want to go farther with the audience. They want a deeper relationship with an audience. And it's the formula is only the starting point. I think the alternative script writings, the book in various versions has said, use this, go farther, take creative risks. And we've seen it in television. That's what they're doing. And there we are. And we look forward to others doing this, other Lincolns being done, you know, because that is what is exciting, stimulating in making, writing, and making movies.
Let's say someone's watching this and they still don't quite get what we're after here with alternative script writing. Can you guys point to some films through the generations or that were pivotal to their eras that would qualify as alternative script writing?
It's funny because I'm now teaching a course on American independent features. We start in 1979 with Bush Mama, Heidi Greene's film. And we go through things like She's Gotta Have It and Stranger Than Paradise and Daughters of the Dust. And these are really obviously aggressively, formally different than most mainstream films. But then I think as you come into the last 10 years, there are films that are also different, but different maybe in more subtle ways. Films that, these original films I talked about are, seem to really feel that they have to separate their audience from mainstream in a very aggressive way. I think later films are willing to accept that people are sort of able to make that separation and that the line isn't so clear-cut. And you're going to ask me to name a current one, and I'm blanking, so I'm going to throw it in.
How about Stories We Tell?
So, yes.
Which, Sarah Polley's film.
Yeah.
Which some people will say is a documentary, but it's actually there's half the film is enactments or reenactments with actors, and it blends in. And I was so annoyed when I saw that there were actors in it because I wanted to believe it was all real. But it is a wonderful taking us deeply into identity, family. I thought it was an amazing film. But thematically, someone like, Place Beyond the Pines tries to take us into family, but it tries to take us in a different way than Pauly. There's some pretty interesting folks working in this independent space right now.
Another film that strikes me is Winter's Bone. Oh. And the difference of Jennifer Lawrence in that film and how she then performs in Silver Linings.
Sure.
And, Ken is talking about the sort of sense of there being almost real people in stories we tell. Well, you can watch Winter's Bones with almost no sense at all that these are actors. And the writing and the flatness of the storytelling all works with that conceit. By the time you get to Silver Linings, you're clearly in a different world, and her performance is different. And I personally don't think it's anywhere near as compelling.
I agree.
So, guys, if there was an alt scriptwriters Hall of Fame, who would be in it?
Jarmusch.
Jim. Okay.
All right. I have a long list. I just watched a film by Carl Foreman, who wrote a film called The Champion, which just got re-released. And the writing is astonishing. He's a remarkable writer. I think Clifford Odets in Sweet Smell of Success, together with Lehman's story, that's a great piece of writing. I mean, Casey Robinson in Now Voyager, Paul Osborne, a playwright who wrote East of Eden, that's a great adaptation. There's so many good screenwriters, but what I would note is that many of the screenwriters that I admire, they travel across media. Either they were playwrights or they're also novelists. I'm a big admirer of David Benioff right now, who is the executive producer and one of the major writers on Game of Thrones. Well, Benioff wrote 25th Hour, which Spike Lee made into a film, and he also wrote a book called City of Thieves, a novel about his grandfather in the Siege of Leningrad. It's wonderful. Like, for me, great writing, it travels. So I certainly admire the people who have said, I'm a writer. Right now I'm writing for film. Now I'm writing for television. Maybe next week I'll be writing a short story for The New Yorker. I don't know.
Or maybe highlights for children. This is the fifth edition of Alternative Scriptwriting. What's changed from the previous edition, and what's really changed from the first edition? How different,
Well, besides the television chapter, I have a new chapter on characters that are opaque and don't expose themselves in the way characters traditionally do. And I start with Hurt Locker and the question of how do we understand the arc of the character who, leaves the war and then comes back. So another element to me about alternative is characters that evolve but are not, whose evolutions are not as clearly spooned out to the audience as they are in some other films, and the power they create. Ken, you want to talk about your new chapter?
Yeah. My new chapters are primarily about genre and how it's flexible and why genre is important and so on. But and there's a case study of two dark fables, Wizard of Oz and Pan's Labyrinth. But for me, what's changed from the first to now, I think what motivated us initially was so much the embrace of the Sidfield model of screenwriting. And I think we've traveled very far. And I think for me, the journey has suggested that good writing always is breaking one formula or another. And so I think the original intent was to encourage more creative or personal writing. I think that remains at the heart of the book. But I think we've also, in the time of the book's life, seen what was then unusual become mainstream, and there every decade brings changes. I'm thrilled to see the changes around television writing because I do feel it's not a flash in the pan. I think we're going to see much more innovation. And I think it's all about encouraging writers that there is no formula, no techniques, be interested in stories, respect your audience, and go for it, you know, be brave. I think that's still there in the book. I'm excited, you know, what's going on in television, you know, people talk about transmedia and so on. Well, content remains the king. And so we are into saying, let's make content the most interesting, the most stimulating, the best it can be. So we're in support as opposed to against the industry, but we are for quality in the industry, quality in the writing.
Well, speaking of which, it just occurred to me that I neglected to point out what your day jobs are. I will say Jeff is in Philadelphia. He's an associate professor at Temple University's Department of Film and Media Arts. And Ken is in Manhattan. He's a professor of film and television at the Tisch School of the Arts at New York University. And so I mentioned that because I was thinking, I assume that film students are a big part of the audience for this book. What are the most common mistakes that they make in writing scripts at this point in their careers?
How long did you say this program was?
The most common mistake they make is exactly, I think, what Ken is getting at, which is
all of them.
but they tend to write what they have seen without being able to examine and integrate their own experiences and their own sensibilities into their writing. And some of what we have to do is sort of free them from feeling they simply have to make. Sidfield's expression about three acts was you pour your story into the structure. And to some extent, we have to get them away from pouring their story and really to explore their story and understand what it means. And then to give them the freedom to make them understand that there are many ways the story could be told, and that we in the process will help them discover that. So I think that, to me, that's the biggest thing, that they're sort of unconsciously influenced by all the stuff they've seen, and we have to free them and also have them step back and see that consciously, or make them conscious of that, so that they can see what's shaping.
Yeah, I think picking up on this theme, I think there's more to movies than sensation. And so we also have to differentiate plot and character. And what I see is students are less interested in the notion that a character changes in the course of a story, and that change is emotionally, that's our bloodline to connect to the movie. So if it's all plot, So where's the emotional connection? So I find myself pressing closer to questions of character and character population and how the character will change in the course of the story. So to me, that's the front line right now here in New York.
All right, one more question, still along the lines of film school. And this is, I guess I could say this is a personal question because I have a now high school senior who is planning to go to film school in a year and is in the next 6 months going to have to choose which one that is. This is an odd way to end this, but would each of you like to discuss the strengths of your respective film schools?
How about if Jeff talks about NYU and I'm going to talk about Temple?
Okay, whatever you want to do. That's an interesting approach.
Let's talk about Temple.
Okay.
Temple is a thoughtful mix of theory and practice that respects documentary, that respects experimental, that respects how those influence the mainstream. So to me, at Temple, if your child wants a very good mix of theory and practice, Temple is a very good school for that.
Very good. Jeff?
And speaking about NYU, first of all, I would very much suggest that your daughter come visit both of us. And I think we would both be very glad to meet with her and you know, explain this in more detail. But one of the, I think, key distinctions is that NYU is a BFA program, which provides more credits in film and more opportunity, I think, to really master the craft and the art of filmmaking. Temple is a BA program, which limits the number of credits you can take in film to about 50 of 120 and is more about a kind of liberal arts degree. There is an enormous amount of debate about which is better, and it really depends on the student. And a lot of it, a lot of the assumptions of a BFA is that the student will be engaged enough to find all that other stuff, you know, on their own. I think if a student is particularly motivated to see the art of filmmaking as an extension of human experience and the other arts, and will look that way, then a BFA probably makes more sense. If a student needs a sort of more exposure to the liberal arts, then a BA makes more sense. And that may be part of the difference between the schools.
Very good. Well, folks, listen, thank you for that, guys. And I'll put it up to the student and let her figure it out.
I'm sure we'd both love to meet with her.
All right. Thank you. Folks, listen, you can find Alternative Script Writing, Beyond the Hollywood Formula, written by my guests today, Jeff Rush and Ken Danziger, in great stores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching this as a video, right below the video screen, you should see a copy of the book. You can click on it right now, order it at a great price, and have it in days. Guys, is there a website for the book, or do you individually have websites, Twitter, Facebook, any of that stuff?
You know, good point. We don't.
The publisher has it.
Right.
And we always can rely on Amazon.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, Ken Danziger, Jeff Rush, thank you guys so much. Good to see everybody healthy and well. And thanks for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest two-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Marc Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, the TechCrunch headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority, for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.